You are flying high on Locked On Eagles, brought to you by LockedOnEagles.com. I am your host, Michael Kist. Follow my work at Inside the Pylon, Breaking Football, and Grandstand Sports Network. Follow me on Twitter at Michael J. Kist. That's K-I-S-T. As always, I am joined by the best co-host in the game, Mr. 7-Year Streak Without a Bad Day. He is Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. You can follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, what's up, brother? How you doing?
Nothing really, my man. Every day is a good day to be alive. Shout out, though, to my boy, Zach Gitoff, or however the name is said, but he dropped the review saying that, or confirming, I should say, that Ben really is the best co-host, he says. We appreciate it. But yo, we've got 35 ratings, all of them 5 stars. We've got 26 reviews. Y'all are sending in all those ratings, all those reviews. Thank you so much. That helps us out a ton. Doing it for the culture, we really appreciate it.
Yeah, make sure you continue to leave those reviews. Leave your Twitter handle in the review. You enter to win a PFF Edge subscription, which is a $40 value. I have been all day on Twitter just retweeting nonsense Wentz takes from like years ago or even just recently. And I've had a blast today, to be honest with you.
Oh, no.
One tweet that was a link to an article. The article states in the headline, "Clueless Eagles trade for #2 draft pick. More horrendous than it looks."
Oh, okay.
And then from the article, quote, "While the Browns made out like bandits in their first blockbuster move from its new front office, there are no silver linings in this Eagles play."
None.
"There are many reasons this is one of the worst pre-draft moves ever."
Many, many.
"Here are six."
Six? They have six different... That's impressive. We do have to recognize today, however, as a wonderful day in Eagles history, because on Monday, Carson Wentz just hangs 4 touchdowns on the Redskins, puts him to sleep, beautiful performance. And then the next day, yesterday, on Tuesday, Byron Maxwell, the cornerback, part of the deal that helped Philadelphia move from pick 13 to pick 8 to pick 2 to get Carson, Byron Maxwell was released by the Dolphins. We once gave him $63 million, then we moved him for Carson, and now he is released. Just the poetic justice of Monday, Eagles win, Tuesday, Byron Maxwell gets released. I can't wait to see what happens today, man. Wednesday's going to be another great day in Eagle Nation.
I agree. Look, more from this freaking article. Quote, "That's a lot to invest in the game's most important position without having any idea whether Bradford or the rookie will be a success in our new head coach, Doug Peterson. At this point, Daniel sounds like the better of the two because of his history with Peterson." What are you reckless, yeah. Quote-unquote reckless.
This is the classic, listen, I know he's less talented and has been in the league for years and has never gotten a starting job and has no stats to his name, but he knows the system, right? But he knows the system is just this impossible panacea, just this cure-all, be-all for quarterbacks. You can say anything you want about him, but then you say, oh, but he's familiar with the system. That means he'll be okay, right? Well, no, not if he's less talented objectively than the other guy.
Exactly. This guy also predicted, or I don't even know if this was past the draft, that Dallas was going to take Jalen Ramsey, which was really going to help him out. Okay, anyway, the other take that I retweeted out today, Emery Hunt, at F-ball game plan. "In my opinion, Dartmouth quarterback Dalen Williams is better than Carson Wentz, and he'll be in the CGS All-Star game this week. My preview." Okay.
Who?
Right. Dalen Williams. This was Emery Hunt's quarterback ratings for the year that Carson Wentz came out. I'm just going to name all the quarterbacks in order that he had above Carson Wentz. How many do you think it is?
Conservatively? Like, what? 7?
Okay. Cardale Jones. Dalen Williams.
Strong start.
Trevone Boykin. Cody Kessler. Jared Goff. Jacoby Brissett. Vernon Adams. Then Dak Prescott. Connor Cook. Thad Lee. Kyle Washington. And then Carson Wentz at 12.
Oh, wow. So 11.
Very, very strong Carson Wentz opinions.
Some of Twitter's greatest hits are up there. As far as Vernon Adams goes, Thad Lee was a guy that folks got excited about for some reason. You know, he's got Dak up there. So you know the narrative is, yo, I had Dak above Carson.
Right. But you had him at 7 behind, like, yep. Guys I've never heard of. Okay. Now, look, let's start talking about what happened in this Redskins game from a long-term perspective. Mm-hmm. Jason Peters, again, it hurts me to say it, is out for, what is it, MCL tear, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, ACL and MCL tear, which we kind of said on that last pod, you know, it didn't look like it was terrible at first glance. And then on the morning on Tuesday, there was kind of a whisper that the Eagles are hopeful that it's just an MCL injury. It's not a full ACL injury. And from an MCL, you could possibly return later in the season. However, that wasn't the case. A full MCL and ACL tear were confirmed. Jordan Hicks as well, the linebacker with a full Achilles rupture. And so those are two unquestionably season-ending injuries for two key cogs on Philadelphia's team.
Yeah, and I wanted to talk about Halepulivaitiivatai, what we can expect out of him, what the loss is. All right. Peters, throughout the season, has 237 snaps in the passing game, has allowed zero hits, one sack somehow, according to PFF, six hurries, so seven total pressures allowed. And then you look at Vaitai, 93 snaps, three sacks allowed, seven total pressures. So yeah, there's a bit of a difference there. So how are you concerned with Vaitai moving forward, or do you think that we might use some more three tight end sets to try to stay away from some of the more elite pass rushers getting over on Vaitai? Do you switch him and Johnson? I remember yesterday I said that I wouldn't want to switch Vaitai and Johnson left tackle to right tackle.
You're obviously concerned because you just lost an all-pro and now you're at, you know, a second-year, fifth-round player. So the concern is there. But what deserves to be noted is the fact that, number one, you know, Vaitai has had a lot of starting experience given the time that he had to play when Lane Johnson was suspended last year. That's a very good thing, and we saw that he had improvement there. I've always been a little bit higher on Vaitai than most. I remember back in the combine when he was coming out then early in 2016 and watching him and just saying, wow, you know, this kid from TCU is massive, even compared to the other offensive linemen with whom he is. And just, you know, he's got some tools that you like as a tackle that you can plug in. As far as schematically helping him goes, you obviously haven't seen very much of that yet for Philadelphia because they have such good offensive tackles, but I'm not terribly fearful of that because of the extent to which the Eagles use their tight ends, right? And if you go and you look at Carson's, you know, massive touchdown to Mac Hollins, one of the first things you're going to notice is the fact that the Eagles were in 11 personnel. They're in ace, so they've got a tight end and they've got a running back in. The tight end chipped the edge on one side and the running back chipped the edge on the other. You know, it's not like they've never done this before, and that's one of the reasons why Carson had such a clean pocket for that throw. And so, yeah, I think that, you know, schematically we haven't seen the Eagles have to do it too much, but that they'll definitely be able to help out Big V in that way. I'm keeping him at left tackle certainly for the foreseeable future. If we get to a point where there's big problems coming off the left side, then maybe you investigate a switch just to see what will happen. I think that when you look at the potential free agent options such as, you know, Will Beattie, such as Cyrus Congio, I don't know how to say that guy's name, Orlando Franklin is another guy, I think when you look at those names, you might bring them in as depth, but I don't think that they're gonna be starting over Big V moving forward.
Yeah, I think it's Kawana Joe. Anyway, so we'll yeah, you got me. So we'll move on to Hicks then, his injury, the impact of that. Eagles play a lot of nickel personnel, and they play more nickel personnel than base. And when you look at the snap counts, Jordan Hicks has played 70% of the snaps. You know, week six, he went down with an injury. Michael Kendricks is considered a starter already, but he only played 51% of the snaps after week seven. That's because he's off the field a lot. So what you're going to see is more Kendricks on the field. He'll stay in for nickel as well. Then when we go into base, you'll see either Najee Good or Joe Walker, who's going to have to step up. I know they like him in the building. And then you think about, dude, Hicks kind of regressed for me this year. And I understand his role is important. He's the one getting the calls and getting everyone lined up. And that is going to pass on to Nigel Bradham in this situation. But against the run, I think he had more gaffes so far this season than he had all season last year. And I really do like his mental capacity for the game. Coming out in college, he was known as an assignment robot, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But, you know, losing that hurts the impact on the run game. I don't think he's been very good against the run. He's been good in coverage, and he's historically been good in coverage, but he's also historically been injured a lot as well, and that was the knock on him coming out of Tennessee. How do you feel about this linebacking core moving forward?
Yeah, it's really interesting because, and this might sound contrary, I don't know how widely accepted of an idea this is, but whenever I watch a 4-3 defense, if your middle linebacker is making a lot of plays, you're in trouble. That's not what you actually want to be happening. Mm-hmm. You know, you want him to be keying correctly and to be making appropriate plays, but if the run's going up the middle in a 4-3, you really want your defensive tackles to be forcing that thing immediately. And the middle linebacker can make tackles in those situations, but it's very rare that you see a halfback dive in today's NFL where it's just straight man up blocking and the middle linebacker is going to be free. Usually anytime you're running up the middle, you've got it schemed somehow that you're taking out that middle linebacker. One of the reasons why you constantly hear quarterbacks and centers IDing the mic, you know, 53 is the mic, 52 is the mic, is because they're blocking that guy. He's right. The key central part of the defense. So if they're executing, he's not making a play. You want really your interior defensive lineman and then your Sam and your Will linebacker to be making plays in the run game as a 4-3 defense. So I hear you when we're talking about Hicks hasn't been on as good on film. Absolutely. You know, that big Kareem Hunt touchdown comes to mind where he made a mistake. That the Travis Kelce touchdown later in the game, he was just a split second too slow for sure. But also, as the play of Michael Kendricks around him has improved and the play of Timmy Jernigan in front of him has improved, you can understand why Hicks hasn't been as featured, you know, as statistically productive as we've seen him be in the past. And I think that that's, you know, that regression, if we want to call it that, is good news now that you can't have Hicks on the field, because you know that you can trust Bradham and Kendricks and Jernigan, who've all really stepped up in a big way this year. The only caveat there is Bradham and Kendricks both play a very similar style of gap shooting. They're aggressive. Right. They like to get down the field. Hicks has always been a good guy to make a tackle 3 yards down the field because he's a little bit more reserved, like you said, robotic assignment-wise in the way that he plays, whereas Kendricks and Bradham will take more risks. And so you do want to watch out for that. You know, you might see a few more big runs break off into the second level, but you're going to continue to see the excellent defensive line play and the high incidence of 0 to 1 yard gains that I think you have seen when Hicks was on the field.
Yeah, so it's not all gloom and doom on that regard, because Kendricks has played better. Hicks had taken a little bit of a step back. It's the depth that worries me. If one of those goes down, like you said, replacing one, not a big deal. Replacing two, things get bad, and they looked pretty bad there for a second, especially with Jordan Reed going off on us in coverage. Najee Good was just lost out there in zone. So we're going to move on to a topic that is near and dear to our heart here on Locked On Eagles. Alshon Jeffrey. I am starting to get on the train of not trusting this guy or thinking that he's going to be the kind of impact that we're going to bring back next season. So let's run through some stuff here. 54 targets, 26 catches. That's a 48.1% catch rate. 11 deep targets, one catch. His catch rate is 173rd worst in the NFL out of 186 qualifiers.
That's less than ideal.
He has a drop rate that is 13th highest in the league at 7%. He is 31st in the league in yards per route run. I mean, there is this narrative out there that some Eagles fans are talking about, and I'm going to the film this week to check this out, because people are saying that Alshon being out there makes life easier for Ertz over the middle. I don't necessarily buy that. Teams don't double team wide receivers that much. I don't think that they're shading over to Alshon. He can barely get open without pushing off. And by the way, he got flagged for an offensive PI in this game because he can't get open without pushing off. And even when he gets up against guys like Casey Hayward, who are smaller than him, substantially smaller than him, he still has to do it, and he's still not getting any kind of separation. So I don't think that Alshon is feared by opposing teams, and he shouldn't be. I don't think they're rolling coverage his way. I don't think they're putting a cone bracket on him like, you know, a team like the Patriots would do against DeAndre Hopkins. I don't think any of that is affecting Ertz whatsoever. I think we're just doing a really good job of game planning Ertz open in the middle of the field. And it has nothing to do with Alshon, because Ertz could be on the same side of the field as Alshon, and who's covering Ertz? The safety on that side. So where's the double cut? I don't get it. I don't get the narrative. So I'm going to dive into the film. I wanted your thoughts on this too.
No, it's very interesting. And a conversation that has to be had and is finicky in regards to, you know, what does scheme mean and what does personnel mean? And obviously, you know, you can watch the film, but can you say with 100% certainty this defensive coordinator was not concerned with Alshon? No, you can't. You know, you don't really know where his risk assessment was. So that's tricky. You know, your initial thought is, all right, Alshon Jeffrey, and to even a lesser extent, but still notably, Torrey Smith are now on the field for the Philadelphia Eagles. What does this mean? Well, for defensive coordinators, or I'll start with this. For offensive coordinator, you know, Doug Peterson, who's designing the plays, calling the plays, it means that I can threaten down the field a lot more than I did last year. And you're seeing that right away. 2016 tape compared to 2017 tape. The Eagles are just sending more routes downfield, period. It's undeniable. What that means now as a defensive coordinator, all right, I've got to play a little bit more, you know, two high coverage. I got to play a little more cover three coverage. I can't play as much cover one as I'd like to. Teams are still doing it against Philly because we don't see them attempt as many deep shots as most teams. That's a reality. But I need to play more cover two, cover three. And that already starts to open up the middle a little bit. That's undeniable. But the question now becomes, where is the point of diminishing returns, right? Because you've got Alshon Jeffrey, who's a very talented wide receiver. As of right now, he's on a one-year $9.5 million contract, which can incentivize up to $14 million. Now, it's very unlikely it gets up there because the stats aren't going to be there for him. But let's call him an $11 million, a $12 million wide receiver. Okay. Well, is his $12 million worth being maximized in Philadelphia? The answer is no. You know, he simply isn't enough of a piece of this offense where he's worth that sort of a money. And if you can get a receiver that threatens teams enough to force them into that too high coverage, to force them into that deep coverage, to force them to respect the deep ball at a lower cost, that's just simply more economical for your team. And when I say this, what's important to recognize is that Doug Peterson's offensive scheme, Doug Peterson's passing concepts, and then Carson Wentz's execution thereof is truly what is making this offense tick. And to the extent to which Alshon Jeffrey has an effect upon that, okay, we can debate it. But the reality is that scheme is winning here. Design is winning here. That's undeniable with which Doug Peterson is doing. And so you're at the point now where, okay, who are the best teams in the league, Mike? Kansas City. Tell me Kansas City's wide receiver one. Well, you know, St. Louis. St. Louis has got Sammy Watkins. They're not, you know, successfully
Robert
feeding
Woods
him.
Is their wide receiver one.
Exactly. He's not. They're not feeding Sammy Watkins the ball with any success whatsoever. They've got Cooper Kupp. They're running that offense through those guys with Jared Goff, right? Because Sean McVay is designing that offense. Mm. What? Okay, you know, you get to New England. New England's got like three receivers of equal danger at equal levels of the field. They don't have a true wide receiver one. You go to Pittsburgh. All right, Pittsburgh's got Antonio Brown. He's a wide receiver one, but is he your prototypical wide receiver one? No, he's not. He's a juiced up Jarvis Landry, right? He's incredibly nuanced, incredibly detailed, fantastic hands, great route runner. He's insanely competitive, but it's not like he's a 6'4", 220 monster who's eating cornerbacks alive. No, this isn't, you know, Calvin Johnson, Julio Jones. These guys aren't taking over the league. They're not the best offenses in the league right now. They aren't. Mm. Scheme is winning. Yeah. Offensive schemes and distributing the football and understanding passing concepts, that's what's winning in the NFL right now. And so Jeffrey could be doing more in this offense, sure, but why would we try to make him do more? This offense is clicking on all cylinders with the way that it is. And so it isn't a matter of whether Alshon is a wide receiver one. It isn't a matter of, you know, has Alshon lost a step. It's how much do the Eagles really need that strong wide receiver one, you know, that X split end wide receiver impact on the outside? And how much do they have to pay for it? Because if they're overpaying for it with Jeffrey right now, they shouldn't bring him back next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, how much do you credit Alshon Jeffrey for? Let's just take an example of a play that the Eagles have run successfully this year. They had a touchdown with Trey Burton on it. You're in the red zone. You've got Alshon on the left side. Adrian Peterson is up in his face. Patrick Peterson is up in his face. He takes one step towards Peterson. He stops. In the slot, Trey Burton runs a fade. They throw the fade to Burton.
Oh, you're talking stab? You're talking the stab play?
The stab play. We love it. We run it. Does Alshon get credit for standing there? Because if so, I'll put a freaking tackling dummy out there, and people are going to say, oh, well, he drew coverage from Patrick Peterson. Who cares? He's playing on the – Who cares? Hey, Patrick Peterson is not going to cover Trey Burton anyway. We're being effective with our scheming. We're getting the matchups that we want. Having Alshon stand out there in front of CB1 isn't going to change anything. We'll just stand someone else out there. Alshon needs to produce if we want to bring him back. Anybody that tells me that he's playing up to the level that we need to pay him next year, whatever he's going to demand, I completely disagree. And like I said, if I'm wrong, if he is drawing safety shades and cone bracket coverage when I go and look at the tape, which I highly doubt, then fine. I'll admit that I'm wrong. Just like I admitted that I'm wrong pretty much on Alshon all the way up to this point. So that's what you have to do as an evaluator. Things change. I really liked Alshon in the offseason. I liked his tape. Things change. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have the same burst, which he was never the burstiest guy anyway. He looks slow. He's not making the contested catches like he used to make. His catch rate is atrocious. I mean, what else do you need to see?
No, absolutely. And you know, I wasn't like the biggest dude in Alshon's camp coming in with the contract and what was gonna, you know, with the pieces that were available. You know, I was a guy that, having seen the way that Doug Peterson's offense ran in Kansas City and then ran in that first year of Philadelphia, I said, bring in Kenny Stills, bring in Terrell Pryor. We just needed kind of a body out there who can cause you some trouble as the X receiver. I'll tell you something right now. If I'm a defensive coordinator and I'm preparing for the Philadelphia Eagles, are you scheming to stop Alshon? Or are you scheming to stop Ertz?
I'm scheming to stop Ertz, and we're still and teams are doing that, and we're still finding a way to get him. This is what we're talking about, man. We're winning with scheme. We're out coaching people. That's how you win in the NFL.
Exactly. And so, you know, this narrative that the attention that Alshon demands is what's opening up the offense. Well, eventually, defensive coordinators are going to say, listen, we're going to close down Ertz and we're going to close down Aguilar and we're going to make you throw it to Alshon.
Right.
And, you know, if and when that day comes, which I think they've already tried that and been unsuccessful, but if and when that day comes and Alshon explodes for a 10-catch, 150-yard touchdown game, then we'll know that defensive coordinators simply have to try to pick their poison. But up until this point, what we've seen is that, you know, teams are playing single on Alshon, you know, teams are playing basic coverages, and Doug Peterson and Carson Wentz and the other weapons are doing a fantastic job opening up the offense thereof.
Like you said to me on the Cardinals postgame show, Patrick Peterson wasn't even shadowing Alshon.
Right.
Right? He's not getting open. We keep talking about, oh, he's got tough matchups. He's got tough matchups. He's a wide receiver one.
Either way, this is a... first world problem. This is a discussion of narratives and understanding of scheme and the way that personnel is deployed. Fact of the matter is that the Eagles passing offense is running on all cylinders. And, you know, we can talk about Alshon Jeffrey's effect on it. But as of right now, you know, we're not going to fix what ain't broke.
Quick stat for you, because we can't go a whole show without talking about Carson Wentz, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've got, what, the big Carson Wentz bonanza 2.0 coming up on Thursday, right?
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Quick stat from the Redskins game, just to recap that a little bit more. When blitzed, 129.2 passer rating. This guy is cool as ice, man.
You know, one of the scariest things about this Jason Peters injury is that Carson Wentz has one of the biggest passer rating differentials in the NFL when it comes to pressured versus not pressured. And there's a fine line between, you know, passer rating versus the blitz and passer rating versus pressure, because you can be blitzed and not pressured, and you can be not blitzed but pressured. That being said, you have seen on tape improvements in that regard. That's still the scariest thing, though, is making sure that Carson can handle pressure when he's throwing the football. Dude needs to learn how to check down, man. He hates checking down. He wants to break every tackle.
You can tell it. You can sense when he wants to take that big shot. You know what I mean? You could just see him start to load up, and you're like, oh, man, here. And then he pulls it down. You're like, but look, QB rating doesn't take into effect the fact that he is the leading quarterback rusher in the league. He's got that escapability to go along with him, too. So while there's a difference there, he's also making some things happen with that. You're going to have that high variance with a quarterback that wants to take shots like that. Mm-hmm. That's fine. I'll live with that all day. I would rather live with a quarterback that is going to be aggressive downfield and still be pretty responsible with the ball, which Carson has been much better at lately, than, you know, than have a quarterback that's going to go short of the sticks on every single third down.
No, I agree with you. Cough, Sam Bradford, end cough.
Little subtweet there for Sam Bradford. Ben, do you want to let the listeners know what we got going on for the rest of the week? Gentle listeners, listen up, guys.
Yo, what's up, gentle listeners? So here's the plan. We've got today's Wednesday. Usually the crossover pod is Wednesday. Y'all are like, what's happening right now? We rescheduled the crossover pod to be Thursday. Brian Peacock of Locked On 49ers is coming on to join us. Fantastic stand-up dude. We wanted to give you 2 days worth of Washington breakdown before we turned our eyes to the Niners. So tune in tomorrow. We'll be talking 49ers with Locked On Niners host Brian Peacock. Friday is obviously our preview show, but we do intend on that preview show to giving a big shout out to Carson Wentz. Very likely that we'll be able to bring on one of the analysts that's been covering him over the years, Mark Schofield of Inside the Pylon and of Bleacher Report. If you remember preseason, kind of, you know, right around week four of the preseason before the year started, we brought on Mark to talk with him about what he expected from Carson in year two. Obviously, if you guys follow Mark on Twitter, at Mark Schofield, host of Locked On Patriots, stellar dude, you know that he's really psyched about Carson playing well. He's a big Carson fan, and he's one of, you know, it's shocking how often he's just playing right with what he calls and what he predicts. He's a fantastic quarterback analyst. Mike, yeah, he's one of your boys.
This is what happened during the Redskins game, right? I get a message from Mark. And look, Mark started watching Carson Wentz the year before he declared at North Dakota State. and was like, keep an eye on this guy. So he was way ahead of the Wentz wagon, right? Mm-hmm. So during the Monday night game, after he had blown up, Mark sends me a PM on Twitter and is like, yo, you owe me one, because I get so stressed out watching Carson play because he has so much invested in it that he turned the game off after the first series and he started playing like The Witcher 3 or something like that just to keep his mind off the game. And he said, now I won't turn it back on. It was like third quarter when he sent me this. He's like, I won't turn it back on. I don't want to jinx it.
No. Once Carson started playing well, you don't change anything, right, man. Very superstitious. So keep an eye out for that Friday pod with Carson Wentz, Love, and Mark Schofield. Then we got San Fran that week, Denver next week, bye coming up in 2 weeks. Keep it locked on, baby.
Keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.